Start with me, Jim Couts, board member.
Teresa Meyer, board member.
Stacy Kaiser, I'm here, board member.
By happenstance, alphabetical, Don Meeks, board member.
Delanne Reggie, Parks Foundation.
Hello, Delanne.
Hi.
Kevin Tyler, Parks and Lands staff.
Got Eric up there.
Oh, there's John.
Great.
David Stipe, Parks and Lands staff.
And John's here.
I am here. My apologies for my tardiness.
It's all right. We're doing just finished introductions, I think. Did we get everybody? Is Felix here?
He is not here. He was not able to make it today.
Okay. All right.
And I think there are a few additional park staff members that needed to introduce okay. themselves.
Lindy Wallach, I'm the park planner.
Hello.
Hi.
And Jessica Kretzinger, Parks and Lands admin staff.
And excuse me, Eric Christensen, I'm Clark County Parks and Lands.
Eric. So, John, I guess we're up. You being the chair, we're set to approve the minutes for February and March.
All right. Has anybody read or have edits to the minutes, or do we have a motion to approve?
I will move to approve.
All right. Moved. Any seconds?
I'll second.
Very good. Moved and seconded. All in favor of the minutes?
Aye.
Minutes passes. I am frantically trying to catch up and find the agenda. There it is.
John, we're going to move Heritage Farm to the first
item. Okay. And I'm assuming it's Rocky on Heritage Farm?
No. Who have you got here, Kevin?
Yeah, so the Heritage Farm discussion.
Today, sorry.
Yeah, sorry. I'm filling in for Rocky today. And
right.
We have here today Lindy Wallach, our planner, and then David Stipe as well, our Parks Development Manager, to talk with you about Heritage Farm.
Can I interrupt just a second? I think we had two sets of minutes to approve. It looked like when I looked at the minutes from last time.
I moved that we approve February and March both, unless you got an objection.
Just to clarify, since there's some confusion, let's go ahead and reapprove March as well.
Move to approve.
All right, move, seconded by.
I'll second it.
Yep. There we go. All in favor, signify by aye.
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 All right, that passes. Now, and I'm finally getting up to speed with the. Hold on. Oh. So wait, you said you wanted to move to Heritage Farm. Don't we have a park shelters first here, or actually manager's report?
It's different people, John.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
We talked just before you jumped on and before we started the meeting about moving Heritage Farm up right after public comment.
Got it.
Doing the new business first, and then unfinished business, and then manager's report. Just rearranging the agenda to allow Lindy to present on Heritage Farm, since she needs to leave at about 4:45. So,
got it. Well, Lindy,
that was the discussion.
Okay. Did you not want to do the public comment? I don't know your procedure, but it looked like that was before.
Sorry, guys. Do we have public here?
No, and I did not receive anything in the email box either.
Okay, so with nobody here, let's just move on to Heritage Farm then.
Hey, can you see my slide, hopefully?
Yes.
Right, great.
Yep.
So, good afternoon. I'm Lindy Wallach, park planner for Parks and Lands. I was introduced to the board last year, but this is my first presentation. I've been given the gift of developing an economic sustainability plan for Heritage Farm. In the past, you may have heard this referred to as a business plan. But we're referring to it as a sustainability plan moving forward, as we think that better characterizes it. This afternoon, I'm going to be providing you with some background information on our effort, our approach to plan development, identifying our internal project team, reviewing our proposed schedule, requesting some guidance and feedback on a couple of items, one of that being a steering committee that we like to call together, and then also requesting guidance on the alternatives that we will consider through the economic analysis process. All right, background information. The original master plan concept for Heritage Farm was adopted in 2010, and it activated the agricultural areas as the central element of the site. It provided facilities for community learning and gathering, administrative programming and functions, naturalists, avid walkers, gardeners, farmers, and demonstration and research. The master plan update that was adopted in 2020 retained this focus. Master plan concepts serve as guidance for future enhancement of the site. Completion of this of the master plan allows Clark County and our partners at the farm to pursue a variety of different funding options, including grants and sponsorships and donations that help us implement the recommendations and ideas within the plan. At the time of adoption, council directed staff to explore options for economic sustainability or business planning for the farm and to increase opportunity for community access and involvement in farm programs and activities. Currently, the county funds the WSU Extension Program and farm maintenance and operation out of the county's general fund. The annual impact to the general fund averages over $650,000. Revenues do reduce this to some extent. However, we haven't quite reconciled the difference that it's drawing that down. Council directed Parks and Lands to find alternative revenue sources to decrease that financial impact on the general fund. And additionally, community access to the site is limited to those participating in WSU Extension Service programs or farm partner programming, and the general public does not have access to the site for other recreational uses. So we've prepared a detailed project report of how we will complete plan development. And the approach that I'm presenting here today is a little bit of a simplified version of that so that we can have a relevant discussion, provide relevant information for discussion with the board. Step one of our approach is presenting an overview of our planned approach to the advisory board, to you, and also to council, hopefully next month, and requesting feedback and direction on specific plan elements prior to proceeding with the actual plan development. Step two will be to call together a steering committee that will help guide the direction of plan development. And a makeup of that committee, I'll present that a little bit later for feedback in this presentation. Step three, we are planning on executing a contract with a consultant to provide a public engagement plan and also meeting facilitation services. We're using the MRSC roster to identify a capable and interested consultant to assist with the project. It's important to note that engagement with the community, it'll be done throughout the entire plan development. This is where we really get going with it. The first of three public meetings is planned at this stage, and this meeting would be held to inform to help inform the development of a scope for the economic analysis portion of plan development. Our internal project team is myself, I'm the park planner, and I'll be managing plan development on a day-to-day basis. Rocky Houston, our division manager, will be overseeing plan development and identifying division-related concerns. David Stipe, who's here today, our planning and development manager, will be overseeing plan development and providing input on facility design concerns. And Eric Harrison, I'm sure you're aware of, who's our program manager for Heritage Farm, will represent the farm operations and maintenance needs and also provide input on impacts to farm users. So here's our proposed schedule. It's important that we're really very early on in this project. Once the steering committee comes together and the consultants are onboarded, there may be a shift in timelines based on their input, and any changes made would be to better the outcome of the final plan altogether. We've begun this first task, which is to meet with you and hopefully next month to meet with the council to identify some loose ends. And once we have those in place, we'll get the ball rolling. We hope to meet with the steering committee in the summer for our first meeting, hopefully earlier in the summer. Currently, we are working on the public engagement consultant contract, but there's a pretty long backlog of contracting services with the finance folks. And so I'm not sure that we're going to be able to get the contract executed until mid to late late summer. The public engagement consultant will develop a public engagement plan for the project, and we'll meet with the public to discuss the scope of the proposed economic sustainability plan, and that would be public meeting number one on the schedule. Once we have defined a scope, we will contract with a consultant to assist with economic analysis, and the information we gather will help us develop the written document. And then we're going to move through three draft plan stages planned, with public meetings after draft two and an informative meeting after the final draft is issued. And this would happen in the first half of 2023. And after final approval from the internal team and the steering committee, we would seek your input and feedback, and also seek adoption of the plan by council, finishing in early fall of 2023. Right. So one of the reasons we're here meeting with you today, and that we'll be meeting with council, is to ask for guidance with identifying members of our steering committee. We want to ensure that the committee members selected will help fulfill the council's vision and assist with developing a plan that's beneficial to the community. The purpose of the steering committee will be to provide support and guidance and oversight for development of the plan, the economic sustainability plan. The committee will represent the main stakeholders, the people and the organizations that will be most impacted by plan development. On the next slide, you're going to see a list of organizations and roles of representatives that we believe will assist us with achieving these goals and result in a plan that best serves the community. So hopefully it's easy for you to read. The first four positions are the internal team, myself, Rocky, David, and likely Eric Harrison. The next position is a request for assigning a park board member to participate in the committee and help by providing development input. We also have a position for the WSU Extension Manager to represent the interests of the Extension Services, a Farm Advisory Committee member two of the adjacent property owners. One is Ziegler Hazeldell, which is the mobile home park to the west. The Cowlitz tribe, who is the neighbor to the east. We have a position for Clark County Food Bank as one of the primary property users, Heritage Friends of Heritage Farm. And then also we'd like to seek a neighbor at large position, hopefully someone who lives relatively close to the farm and maybe doesn't use the farm, but that could if access was expanded. So here's where we ask for input. I hope it's okay to kind of discuss this in the middle of the presentation, but we're requesting two things. One, for you to recommend a park advisory board member to participate with us. And then also we're asking for some feedback on the list overall. And if there are any roles that you believe maybe shouldn't be on there or that are potentially underrepresented. So those are my two questions. If we want to start with a board member, that would be great. I can go back a slide if that helps.
Yeah, thank you. And it looks like Dylan has her hand up.
Yeah, actually, the one thing I don't see on here is anybody from the Hazeldell Salmon Creek Business Association, and maybe I just missed it. They had been highly involved in this project years ago in terms of making sure that the park stayed a park and didn't end up with a lot of traffic coming into it. And they were very much interested in it. So I just don't see them represented on this.
Okay. Thanks for that.
I take that down.
Dylan, do you have a contact for?
I can reach out to Dylan after.
Yeah, actually, and I'll be at the Business Association meeting tomorrow, so I can ask some questions and see if anybody is actually still interested in being on this group. But yeah, Lindy, if you wouldn't mind sending me an email so I'll remember to do that, that'd be great.
Sure.
Thank you.
I just have a quick comment. Just looking at the list, my initial thought was it just seems a little bit light on public, and I know you've got property owners on there, but I mean you've got a tribe and an LLC, a business, and the Clark County Food Bank as a property user, but I'm just kind of wondering if there shouldn't be more representation of maybe neighbors at large or potential users. Anyway, that was just my first thought.
Okay.
Yeah, similar thought when I look at this list, and this isn't a criticism, it's a check-in. When I read this list, it looks as if we intend to develop it as a park, not as a farm, because it's very light on farm-type people, i.e. there's no farmer there. What's the intent?
As a farm advisory committee member, but...
Right. So we have representatives of the people who are using the farm now. We've identified two neighbors, and we hope to, you know, identify somebody who's not using the farm but that could. And then if we seek the input of the business association, I think that's a good suggestion as well. David might have more.
If I can jump in, I think that this is a more of a steering committee, not a stakeholder group. There will undoubtedly be a larger group of interested citizens and stakeholders that become involved through the public process. And this group is to sort of help the project with some of the decision-making efforts that need to take place. And in an effort to try and keep that from becoming a giant exercise, we're hoping to find sort of balanced representation of the different interested parties to help us with some of the internal conversations. And and then have those more external conversations with the public, if that makes sense. We're not trying to steer the overly steer, I should say, the outcome of this public involvement process. We're just trying to have some more concise voices at the table when we're talking about some decision points, if that makes sense.
We have a stakeholder list that we would be communicating with throughout the process, much larger than this, that would include the folks I believe that you're thinking should, or you've been suggesting should be at the table. It's just that if we invite too many people to the table, we might not be able to get to the end.
I think Jim just raised his hand, and then
I had kind of the same question that John had. Is the intent to make this a park?
We'll get to some of the possible outcomes after we have this conversation. I think the intent is to find a balance between what council really wants to happen and what the public wants to happen. I think that, you know, I'm not sure whether we can entirely take the farm the way it currently stands entirely off of general fund. But there has been some talk, you know, of that being a desire. And so we'll talk about sort of the different potential outcomes as we move through the presentation.
Right. So my concern, though, is the potential outcome. The steering committee is going to tend to steer toward an outcome, unless you truly want it to be totally neutral. Totally neutral means you have to have somebody from representing every possible outcome. So, for example, if you want an outcome that takes it out of the general fund that is more business oriented, then you should have some business people on it. If you see an outcome more toward a farm, then you should have some farmers on it. Right now, when I look at this, it looks like an outcome headed toward a park. And that's not an objection. It's the way people work.
Yeah, so when I look at the list, not to respectfully point out a different point of view, I see a pretty significant representation of keeping things the way they are. When I see the extension manager on this list, and I see the Farm Advisory Committee member on this list, and I see the food bank on this list, and I think that the reason that they're on the list is because they already have time, energy, and money invested in the property, and they're a partner. The at-large resident that Lindy mentioned is somebody that might represent sort of a different perspective on public access. And so this is I think that, and this is part of the reason why we want a meeting facilitator to be on the team that's neutral, because the outcome may sort of shift in a direction that even members of the steering committee aren't 100% supportive of.
Yeah, good answer.
This is going to be a really tricky conversation.
We haven't heard from a number of our committee. Is there anybody else who wants to throw in on this?
Go ahead. It's Don. I looking at the list, you know, I'm looking for diversity of thought, and it does look like folks are the same color. They're green. They're really focused, and they've got a stake in the outcomes. Obviously the farm related outcomes, whether they be farmers or not. You don't have to be a farmer to know what the outcome's going to be. But you should have some kind of idea of how a farm is operated. I always enjoy inviting those folks who have absolutely no stake in what we're doing, just to bring that that creative thought into play. It always adds to the diversity of thought, and it combats that groupthink. Because I think that would be, you would have the integrity that you need in order to move forward from the committee if you were to have some of those folks on board.
So more neighbors at large?
Yes.
So, John, one of the folks that seems like they're not listed as well is Kingsway, which is pretty much across the street. You've got the school and the church there, and you know, you have a lot of cars in and out of there, and I'm sure that they would be interested to know what's going to go on here as well if it affects what they're doing.
Do you think that they should be a steering committee member or a stakeholder that receives regular updates?
No, I think they should be a steering committee member, because they may decline to be on it, but because they've got so many people coming in and out of there all the time, both with school all day long and then church on the weekend. It seems like that they're going to be interested in what's going on up across the street as well. Like I said, they may decline, but I think it's worth an ask.
All right. Anybody else? All right. So not hearing anybody else. Do we have anybody who's interested in sitting on the steering committee? I was kind of expecting that.
We'll have cake and prizes.
Right. So my suggestion.
What would be the time commitment, real quick, before we, you know, I don't want to volunteer for something that's going to take up, you know, a monumental amount of time. If I knew that it's once a month or something, I wouldn't mind sitting in on that. I'll put my money where my mouth is. How's that?
You know, we haven't really quite discussed that yet, but I think once a month would probably be appropriate.
Similar time and similar avenue like a Teams or Skype or something.
I mean, we would love to have in-person meetings. If that's possible, it may be more difficult to get this many people together in that manner.
But, yeah. And what's the duration? You think about a year or
18 months? So the project would finish in the fall of 2023. So I think just a few months before that would probably be one of the last meetings.
I can do it if you don't want to do it, Don.
I'm still trying to get my feet on the ground with the committee, and I'm here. I'm pondering, and you can see the frustration in my face. Like, I really want to step in, but I really want to become more familiar with PAB and how we operate, and I don't want to bite off more than I can chew. And that's not a microaggression, by the way. That's a truism. Just can't eat faster than you can, you know, put it in your mouth. But I would love to. I'm just not at the point with familiarity with the board in order to volunteer for other activities yet. But in the future, for sure.
Well, Teresa, you're willing. We might put you on and Don as an alternate.
Sounds good.
All right.
One other quick question, John.
John, just one more thing there. I think it's also worth mentioning that just because you're not on the steering committee doesn't mean you can't show up to steering committee meetings. We want to try to control that a little bit because we don't want to have, you know, 6 and 7 hour meetings. But you know, for the park advisory board or the council, if somebody wants to show up to one of those meetings, it's, you know, they're welcome.
Cool. All right. So I'm just going to go for popular acclamation for Teresa and Don.
Okay.
And Lindy, do we have more of the presentation to go through?
Yes. I just want to confirm the feedback on the list as a whole, though, that you'd like to see representation from the Hazeldale Salmon Creek Business Association and more neighbors to be involved and potentially Kingsway Church.
And one other, John, is there a county farmers organization that should be represented here?
You know, I think for my part, Dave had a pretty good answer that actually I like his take on it. As I look through this, it looks more like a status quo list than a parks list, as I originally said once he said that. There is the Farm Bureau, as well as a number of farmers out there. I'm not going to urge such representation. My main point is, let's be cognizant that a steering committee is going to tend to steer. And we need to be careful that the representation, you know, either steers where we want it to or is as neutral as possible.
Lindy, I had one other question too.
Sure.
Earlier, you were talking about, you know, the funding coming from general fund.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did I understand you to say that the general fund is also paying for WSU's extension work there?
Yes, a portion of that is a portion of the $650,000 or so is the extension costs.
Gotcha. Thank you.
But the extension also does pay into the general fund. It doesn't cover everything. What do you know, or perhaps Kevin, do you know how much does, for example, Leverage Park cost? In other words, I'm trying to get a scale. $650 sounds like a lot, but I don't know that actually is.
Is he there?
Sorry, I didn't take myself off mute. Did you say Leverage Park?
Yeah. Well, just can you compare this cost with any other given park? Is there a way to compare this, or is it just such a totally different animal that there's no comparison?
You know, the farm is very different in terms of what we do out there, and then we have a large. You know, there's a large building that's maintained by facilities as well. So the combination of the two make it a very different animal than I think any of our other properties. I wouldn't be able to compare. I don't think. You have Luke Jensen, but then you have all the sports fields and that's a significant cost. So it's probably not on that level, but somewhat less than Luke Jensen, but more than, say, your standard community park.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm going to have to give the rest of the presentation and leave before the next line of conversation. I apologize. I think David will take over for me. Okay, so our second reason that we're here meeting with you and seeking input from the council is to ask for guidance with narrowing down the number of alternatives we will consider for economic analysis. We've identified 5 potential models for consideration based on previous input from council. They're represented here. The ag extension model is what we're kind of calling the current model. It exists with county management of the property. WSU operates extension services through the MOU with the county. Several other community partners utilize the site through agreements with WSU or Clark County directly. All farm maintenance and operation, including the cost of extension services, are paid for through the general fund. Revenues from farm use provide a minimal offset of the financial liabilities, and the farm is only accessible to persons registered or participating in programs from WSU or partner organizations. The incubator model is kind of an expansion of what we have right now. A few council members have voiced interest in an expanded incubator model for this property. An incubator farm is a place where community members are given temporary, exclusive, and affordable access to small parcels of land for the purposes of honing skills and launching farm businesses elsewhere. And often training is made available. Economic analysis would allow us to determine if economic self-sustainability is possible with this model or what that would look like. Incubator farm expansion would be the most similar to the current model of farm operation, and it would likely expand access to other members of the agricultural community or those that are interested in farming. In the middle here, we have public-private partnership model. A public-private partnership would involve collaboration between the county and a private sector company that could be used to finance, build, and operate in expanded facilities. The economic analysis would likely indicate a substantial reduction in the use of general fund to support farm maintenance and WSU extension services. It would be important to identify though through the analysis that what services the community could benefit without setting up competition with existing services in the community. Although public access would likely increase with this model, community members utilizing the site would likely incur a fee or other potential barrier to full access. And non-governmental organization model, the NGO model would consist of forming a nonprofit organization or conservancy, which Clark County would participate in, but that would operate independently of the county. The NGO would assess the community needs and maintain the facility to meet the needs of the community. Access would likely expand based on the needs assessment by the NGO, and it would likely end up with a substantial reduction in the use of general fund to support farm maintenance and extension services. And last, we have the community park model, a community park model with a focus on farming could expand public access to the site, likely to the greatest extent with minimal financial and administrative barriers to the community. A community park would continue the impact on the general fund, and that would likely increase with facility expansion. So this is the second stop here on our request for input. Our intent is to focus the plan so that we aren't evaluating models that the council would not have interest in. We want to know if the models that I've described here are sufficient or if there are any changes that you would like to see. I'll go back to that last slide. And it might help if now I end the slideshow. And David, you could share.
I can pull it up on my screen if you're gonna
okay.
If you're gonna step away.
I will. Really apologize for having to leave.
That's all right, and thank you for presenting. Good to see you.
Yeah, I'm really interested in hearing what you have to say. So,
does anybody want to jump into that one?
Thanks, Lindy, for presenting. I think it was really up to this point, it's been a very insightful presentation. I really like the way you laid out the different models and what type of access that would allow to the public from decreasing to increasing. I I think and I feel pretty passionately that we should lean really to the right. And that's not a political statement. That's the right of your spectrum towards allowing more access and removing barriers, right? I think any initiative to restrict public access at this point is gonna die at the ballot. You know, there's I just don't see a lot of palatability with the public in terms of restricting access. Folks are looking to remove barriers and not create new ones. Not that your models have done that. I'm just saying that the ones that would have a greater success rate lean towards providing more opportunities to people and allowing more people access to the farm, whether it be in a learning capacity or in a productive capacity, either way, and everything in between. It's like folks want to get out and they want to touch our lands. And I think it's incumbent upon us to make that happen through policy. And that's why I'm a board member.
Fantastic.
Just some thoughts.
Thank you. All right, I'm gonna have to leave now. I really appreciate everybody's time this afternoon, and David for taking over.
All right, thanks again, Lindy.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Lindy.
Well said, Don. Does anybody want to respond to Don?
I do have a historic question. When this farm was originally dedicated, I guess, in its current form, do we know what the intent was then?
Well, it was originally a poor farm.
Yeah,
so,
I understand, yeah.
So, you know, going back that farm, the intent was, you know, to feed the poor. It wasn't about public access. It was, you know, if you look at these models, it was probably closest to that NGO model. I'm not sure whether that speaks to where we want to be now or not, but I can give you that much of an answer.
I understand that. When you know, when the county started to partner with Washington State, I don't know, I guess, that history of what went on then.
The intermediate.
Yes, yes.
Kevin?
Figured you'd ask me, yeah. So that's, you know, that's also before my time, but WSU's involvement at the farm is largely, historically was as an extension location, so that, you know, they have a mission, WSU Extension as a mission, and you know, there's farm-related research, agricultural-related research that has occurred at the property for many, many years, and I think continues to occur at the property. So, you know, that's what WSU. They also have education and outreach, and I think if you go back to the counties, once the county acquired the property, and we started, you know, we developed the farm plan, the concept plan back in, I think it was 2010, if I'm not mistaken. You know, the goals are pretty well outlined in that plan, and I'd have to, because it's not at my fingertips, it's not on the top of my brain right now, but I'd have to get that out. But it was kind of, you know, bringing forth the agriculture in the community, right? Making it available to our community, supporting WSU and their mission and use of the farm, and you know, making it a resource for farmers and for the community in terms of agriculture and education about agriculture and things of that nature. So that's kind of the, without going into detail and really reading to you what those goals were, that it seems like that's what the farm was intended to do when the county owned it and went through that public process in 2010. And that public process was updated in 2017, 2018, and council gave us direction, which is why David and Lindy are here talking to you about the sustainability of that property. Does that answer your question?
Pretty much. Thank you.
Hey, Kevin, what, I don't know if we got to this point in the presentation or if it's coming up. What have other similar communities of size done with farms of this nature? If you watch PBS, there's always a snippet on the farm and what kids are doing there for education and everything that we talked about. I mean, what are they doing? What model are other cities similar to size as Vancouver and other counties like Clark, if you can find those? What are they doing? What model are they following?
David, I don't know if you're planning on talking about that.
We'll talk about it very briefly. It's part of the sort of initial sustainability plan development is to do some case studies. And there's also a study that was just completed by WSU, the Metro office of WSU, that we can share with you that talks about some of these other case studies. And the Farm Advisory Board has had guest speakers from other community farms. And by and large, what we're finding is that these community farms, they don't really generally ever break even. And so there is a public-private partnership that occurs. And so we will be studying those in a little bit more detail during the sort of initial parts of this process. And I believe there's a couple more slides that discuss that.
Yeah, thank you for that. Thank you.
Well, I'll jump in and respond to Don's comments. I fully agree with him as far as the public access goes. That's why we're here. I'd moderate it with recognition that the present council really wants it off their books. So that NGO or public-private partnership may be necessary at some level. I forget how many acres it is, 75 or thereabouts. There's enough land there that you could do both.
You know, so I'm looking just on the website, and for the March 2020 master plan, there's a lot of different aspects to it that are already easily, I would think could be community involved. They have 4-H gardens and an interpretive trail planned. There's an historic cemetery. There's a lot to this area, not just the farming part. So I think if I was visiting, I wanted to visit it, I'd like to see all of that, not just, the ag extension part of it. So I think public access and have a lot of variety of interests. I think it has great potential for that. And I don't know if this is a 2020 master plan, so I don't know if this is something they're starting with or not.
So this is David. The assumption is that we wouldn't be revisiting the entire master plan.
Okay.
We might need to do what I would consider a minor revision to the master plan. We might add some programmatic elements, but it wouldn't be a total sort of retooling. And if you looked at the 2010 plan versus the 2019 plan, I would call that a minor revision because of the programmatic elements that are shown on the map. The plan itself aren't that much different.
Right.
I think that the goal of the sustainability plan is to find a way to have Heritage Farms stand more on its own from a financial perspective, and also to increase public access.
Okay.
Don, were you saying something? You're on mute.
Yeah, I was saying I'm going to send you a thumbs up. I think that's what we're looking for. And I like Teresa's idea, and I think she'll be a valuable member of that steering committee. Is why can't we have a hybrid of these models where we partition off some of the property for more exclusive use, and then we, you know, we do something similar where we've just given it to the public to do their thing. And I think there's really some viable options there to explore.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go back to your comment earlier, John, about the comparative cost to this particular park, if that's what you want to call it, to some of the other parks, and say that a lot of the conversation that had happened earlier is that this park is deserving of at least the same funding level, since it is a huge parcel of land that is kind of in the middle of the county. And when we were talking about it at the Business Association years ago and all of the public comment that was going on, we didn't want to see this particular parcel lost. We didn't want to see it turned into developed property, for example, apartments or businesses or anything like that. And, you know, the question came up a number of times, why doesn't this deserve the same funding level as some of the other major parks? If you can fund a park wherever, then why not this park? Even though it may not be exactly the same model, it still seems like it's deserving of funding. And again, back to my other comment is that this is a huge parcel of land that we don't want to see developed into apartments and businesses and those kinds of things. We want to see it available for the public use going forward. I know there were a lot of ideas that had come up, things like having a Saturday market or a wine tasting Saturday, you know, those kinds of things that you can have income coming in off of it, but it's still deserving of that same level of funding as any other major park in Clark County.
Well, that's actually a really good point that needs to be made. I think that the distinction is where the money is coming from. And how much of the general fund money is going to WSU Extension versus sort of park operations. And we're working with the finance department to sort of get at that that breakdown to sort of understand what is sort of site operations versus extension services. So I don't think that there's an intention to entirely defund the site. It's just how we fund it, and can we still maintain some of those services that are being paid for by general services in a different way. General fund, not general services, excuse me.
So we've spent a fair bit of time on this topic. Unless somebody's got something else burning, I'd say let's wrap this one up and move toward the next. It looks like there might be a couple slides left.
Yeah, she just has a slide on next steps. Our goal is to take the information that you provide us today and meet with the council, hopefully in May, get the steering committee together, and finish this public engagement consultant selection. So we appreciate your time today. I'm sure that we will be checking back in with you on this on a periodic basis. So this isn't your only opportunity to see it sort of beginning and then all the way at the end. When it makes sense, we'll come and have a conversation. So that's pretty much it. There you go.
Very good. Well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you.
All right. Who's got park fees? Or are we going to park shelters? I'm not quite sure at this point.
can talk about park fees and park shelters. We can do either one first. Park fees is new business, and we're on the theme of new business. So if you want to do that one first. Okay. Jessica, would you mind sharing the agenda item briefing? Great, thank you. Okay, so Rocky asked me to talk about fees, park fees. So this agenda item essentially discusses the formation of a subcommittee to review parks fees. We know that periodic review of an organization's fees is good practice, and Parks and Lands has not done that in many years. So we would want to look at market trends, cost recovery rates, things of that nature. We would look at what's the cost to provide a service. So if you take parking fees, for example, like what goes into providing providing parking at a park and why we charge the fee. We want to compare it to other jurisdictions that are comparable size in the region. What does the city of Vancouver charge for parking fees? What do we charge? What do we see charged at state parks in the area or agencies across the river, that kind of thing? And then work through a process of determining if a fee change is recommended. And things like fairness, equity, sustainability, and consistency with the county parks mission and vision. And then also what cost recovery targets might be considered. So the list of fees is shown here in Exhibit A. Parking fees, we charge fees for picnic shelters. We have permit fees for park uses and, depending on the type of use, those fees might go up or down. And then we have fees for the use of athletic fields, the rental of athletic fields. And lastly, I would just say that, so this was identified as an informational item only at this point. So it doesn't sound like Rocky wanted you to take any action, just to maybe discuss it. And that we are looking for formation of a subcommittee. And we also have Eric Christensen here, who is a wealth of knowledge on park fees and all the various different fees that we have. And if you have any questions, I'm sure Eric would be more than happy to talk about it. That's what I have.
And I'm assuming subcommittee there means two or three meetings.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm assuming staff would be helping with doing the heavy lifting in terms of pulling together information to review and discuss with that subcommittee.
Right. Well, let's start with, first, does Eric have any additional input before we go anywhere on that?
Not at this time. Just thank you for including me, and just kind of happy to listen and hear the thoughts and questions and feedback you might have at this time. And then if, again, as Kevin said, I think he's covered it pretty well. And then if there are questions, I'm just happy to jump in and answer them as needed.
Do we have individuals interested in this? I will say this is my impression, much bigger deal than it may appear at first. This is going to have big impact. So definitely something we need to give good attention to, and something that's likely to be a discussion before the commission at some point too.
John, I would just add to what you said that's true. Our council is really who would be authorized to make changes to our fees, right? I mean, so anything that we think we may want to recommend after doing this exercise would eventually go to council for consideration, if there were a recommendation. And, you know, we've looked at some of this in the past in terms of parking fees and what a change to parking fees would look like versus what a change to, say, picnic shelters would look like. And Eric can probably speak to where the kind of biggest bang for the buck is in terms of if a change were made. You know, we see thousands of vehicles a day versus how many shelter reservations per weekend, you know, that kind of thing. So if you have questions about that, we can try to speak to them today or pull together more information. And then, like you said, Rocky's write-up suggests that it would be 2 to 3 subcommittee meetings over the next 6 months to review current fee structures and policies, and then form some recommendations to bring back to PAB for more discussion.
This is Stacey Kaiser. I have a question actually for Eric. And I apologize for my video being off my internet. I live out in the country and it's super sketchy. So it works a little bit better when I turn my video off. So in my experience in reserving picnic shelters, say at Louisville Park, they get nabbed up really, really fast. And I don't know if that was kind of pre-pandemic. So I'm just kind of curious if that's still the case, that because I've always found the picnic shelters to be super cheap, but hard to get. So anyway, I just wanted to get some more information on that if I'm like reading that wrong.
So pre-pandemic versus post, how quickly are they moving?
Yeah, and just in general, is my impression correct that they get reserved very, very quickly?
Typically, currently, as the kind of the other agenda item will cover, shelters can be reserved up to a year in advance. It begins to ramp up in the new year. We start getting contacts and calls and reservations, but then as we get closer to May and June, it really kind of hits its peak in terms of demand. We will historically not have an available shelter on weekends at Louisville in July and June, July, and once school gets out. So between the time school gets out and Labor Day, it's hard to find a shelter on a weekend at Louisville. And what I'm seeing so far is that June so far looks pretty tough to find a space already. So what I've seen so far, we're trending in that same direction.
Okay, Don.
Thanks for recognizing me. I just had two questions about the list. Well, three actually. Is this list, the Exhibit A, is that all encompassing? Is that all the fees that we would charge in one of our facilities, or are there some missing? And I'm not sure who the question's for.
I'll do my best to answer it. I think that it's relatively all encompassing, with the exception of for picnic shelters, it largely varies by location. So depending on the size of it, how many people it can hold, like some of the shelters at Louisville are massive and they can hold like 250 people, something like that. So I think it's everything, but again, Eric is the expert. So
yeah. I'm not going to beat you up on that because my question was really, my question was focused on, we have fees for scheduling and reserving volleyball and for volleyball tournaments. And the board was presented with a suggestion that we need to build out some pickleball courts. So I didn't know if volleyball was legacy and we're moving towards pickleball, but what about tennis courts and other types of courts that want to be reserved for basketball, et cetera, for that? Would that be the same fee structure, or is that something different that I just don't see? And then my other question would be, I noticed the filming and the photography fee, which I'm all on board with. I just wondered if those fees are structured with tiers, like the other, like we have on the other events, because photographing a wedding is very different than me driving my drone over the river just for a few takes, right? Versus a commercial about milk or Jeep or I don't know, whatever. I mean, I think that there's also a different, we'd serve the public better if we had it tiered for photography fees like we do the other events as well. I don't know, just some thoughts. Did that make any sense?
Yeah, I can speak to the photography and the filming. It's intended to be for a commercial. So if we have in the past, we've had companies like L.L. Bean, Toyota, or those kind of companies do still or commercial like TV commercial filming in parks. So that's what that's what it's intended to cover. The kind of amateur, you know. Bird photographer going out to a park, it's not intended to address that at all.
Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, but it's an interesting conversation we could have in a subcommittee about tiers as it relates to that. But at the end of the day, it's intended to be commercial. And then your question was about tennis courts. I believe we only have one tennis court that I can think of off the top of my head. And it's at Louisville Park, and it's never been requested to be reserved. I can't say why that is, and it's not on this list. But that's not to say that it couldn't be something that's considered moving forward.
Yeah.
Same with pickleball. Well, if and when we get pickleball courts, you could put that on the list as well.
Yeah, you could turn a pickleball court or a tennis ball court into pickleball relatively quickly, right? With your own equipment, just the nets, and the size and shape is very similar. So that's what a lot of folks are doing. I just didn't know if that was something we wanted to put into our fee structure or not. So, hey, thanks for the info, Eric. I appreciate that very much.
So I'm going to try to cut down conversation because what they're really asking is who wants to help look through this thing. Do we have any takers?
I'll take a crack at it, John.
Awesome. Anybody else? They'd probably appreciate a couple people on this one. Maybe we should put Felix on it since he's not here.
John, you can put me in as an alternate, and then Jim and I will talk about the time commitment, and maybe I can stand in for him, and vice versa.
All right. Let's put Jim, Don, and Felix on. I feel mean today. Let's put Felix on there too. And I definitely, Kevin, I would, and you guys say this in your review here. This is definitely something that I think we should have a robust conversation over with the full committee, because it's impactful to say the least.
Totally agree.
All right. Anybody else? We're moving on. Looks like we're moving on. And now we can go to park shelters.
Yeah. Okay. So this agenda item, I understand, was discussed at the March meeting. And just as a summary, it's a recommendation for a pilot program to be implemented starting in 2023 that would extend reservations from the traditional May 1st to September 30th booking window to an April 1st to October 31st booking window. We see a lot of use in April and in October. Weather's nice. There's no way to reserve them and pay the fee for them right now. It's you go out and you show up at 7 a.m. and you wait and hopefully you get it. And then you sit there all day. No, I don't know how it works. It would also allow reservations to occur 11 months in advance. And Eric, I think that's the change. You said it was it's currently 12 months in advance. So this would be a pilot program to see how it works, see how much additional interest it generates, and how many additional reservations and that kind of thing. And again, we have Eric here to answer any questions if you have them. And this is marked as an action item, so I think we're asking for a recommendation or not recommendation to move forward with the pilot program at this time.
I have
Go ahead, Stacey.
I just have a question on this one. Who, or maybe it's not an appropriate time. Maybe you need to say something first, John. I don't know. I was going to ask who is going to police this at the parks. I mean, I know how it happens at Lewisville, but how would it happen at other parks?
And do you mean by, in terms of maintenance?
Like reservations, like say you reserve a picnic shelter and you show up and somebody else is in the picnic shelter.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm going to have to let Eric speak to that because I think it's a combination of his fee collection staff and parks maintenance staff, but I'll let him speak to it.
So at places like our region, the large regional parks, we don't tend to run into this too often in terms of squatters or those kind of things. But at our community parks where we do experience it from time to time, I will have someone, I work to try to have someone going around from park to park to check in and verify the reservations for that day. Just check in with the customer, make sure that is who they say they are, make sure that they're comfortable and settled. And we can't get to everyone's, but what I do tell people when I have the opportunity is if there is a squatter and they are refusing to leave, then it does need to be escalated either to our parks after hours number or to non-emergency. That happens not very often. We do approximately 1,300 reservations in total on an annual basis, at least pre-pandemic. So over the course of the summer, it might happen a few times, and that's typically the course of action. At places like Lewisville and our larger regional parks, we have staff. We'll have a fee collector in the booth and perhaps an additional person or two in the outside of the booth in the field, just checking in with guests and reservations to make sure that they're getting settled in and everything's moving forward for them.
Okay, Delan.
Yes, I may have missed this. Why did you change it from 12 months to 11 months for the reservation time? Why not leave it at 12?
Unless Eric has the answer to that, I'm sorry, I do not. I'd have to check with Rocky. Eric, do you know?
That's going to be a question for Rocky, but the conversation that he and I had at least was centered around fairness and equity and ensuring that, or at least providing opportunity to other groups so that one group doesn't always book the same shelter every single year on the day that they're actually in the shelter. So if you book it a year in advance on May 1st, when you're in the shelter, you can potentially book it the very next May 1st, and it doesn't give others the opportunity or a window to reserve it. That was the kind of the conversation we had. But again, I don't want to speak for Rocky, but perhaps he can address that.
Got it right, Eric. That's what I remember.
Me too.
Okay, so any other, or Delan, is your hand still up? No. All right. Any other thoughts, or do we want to go ahead and move on this one?
Make a motion that we go ahead and approve the program.
I'll second.
All right. Moved and seconded. Last chance for further conversation. And seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right, that was quick and easy. We like that. Do we have a manager's report?
We do. I guess that's me again. Okay, so I have a few items to cover. So Rocky wanted me to mention that we were recently informed about the possibility of a council item to allow the county to accept state disabled veterans parking passes at our parks or something similar to that. So the idea would be to allow state like disabled veterans to park at a reduced or, you know, I'm not sure how the state system works, but at a reduced rate. So that's something that we had heard about recently, and it's it may be something that we are asked to push forward for consideration and for council to adopt. So just wanted to let you know about that. Rocky asked me to give an update on some of our personnel, our recruitment that's been going on. So we did officially hire a new crew chief for our North Parks system. His name is Jeremy Stevens, and actually he was a transfer from one of the road operations sections. He had been doing medians maintenance. He was the crew chief for that section. So so Jeremy started, I think, last week. And then David Stipe finalized the hiring process for our program coordinator position, and that's Mac Douglas, and he will start in May. And then we hired our lands coordinator position. So that was, if you, any of you worked with Pat Lee, we hired Danielle Cowley. So it was an internal promotional opportunity for Danielle, and she started recently, and we'll try to get her out here for an introduction. She used to work in the vegetation management program. So she was a lead for a bunch of the different noxious weed control programs. And then I know Rocky's working on getting our office assistant hired and has done interviews and is working towards, I think, checking references next when he gets back. And then we've been working on hiring a position in vegetation management as well. So gone through interviews, working on reference checks there. So once those positions are done, the office assistant and the vegetation management position, I think we'll just have one or two vacancies to fill. So parks might almost be fully staffed.
Progress made. Good job on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So next is an update on capital projects, and David's going to take you through that. And then I'll finish with a few more things.
All right, I'm going to share my screen again and then get started here. So while I'm getting this put together, one of the things that we are doing while we're sort of between staff, virtually every position except for Eric's position is still in the operations center. Every other position was sort of in transition. So we've taken the opportunity to do a little bit of a reset on our workspace to try and provide a little bit more room for the program coordinators and the planners, so they have a little bit better space to land when they start. So that's ongoing as sort of an aside to the capital work that is ramping up as the weather changes. So this is a slide from a presentation that we will be doing to the for the council on the PROS plan. And so these are the capital project locations for the next 6 years. And I'm just going to really quickly go through this list and give you an update on where we are in whether planning, design, construction. So you see sort of a smattering of projects that are either sort of major park renovations or entirely new parks. And so we'll just jump right into this. We'll start off with Cozy Camp. This is located Northeast 29th Avenue. Up north, it's a new park for the system, and the bid docs have gone out and we are currently getting ready to award this project for construction. And it came in over bid, but we made some adjustments to the project budget, and we are going to award this project. Lots of projects, as you can imagine right now, are coming in over bid. The pandemic hasn't really helped us out in that regard. And now with oil pricing the way it is, everything gets delivered and lots of stuff are made out of oil. And so we're seeing real volatility in our bidding. Phyllida is as just a parking lot and a playground improvement. Children's Celebration Garden Playground is being constructed at Phyllida. This project also is going to be out for construction this year, and the project is estimated at $1.1 million. That includes engineering and permitting, so the actual construction is $832,000. Hawkinson Community Park and Disc Golf facility is actually been bid, and we're getting ready to construct this project this year. Should be done later this year. I don't have the exact numbers for the way the bid opening was, but I do believe it came in real close to that construction estimate. The Harmony Sports Complex parking and safety improvements project is still being designed. There's some issues with undocumented fill on the site, and we've been talking about how to manage that undocumented fill along with some water rights issues associated with watering the fields. We currently don't have any more than I think 5,000 gallons a day, and that's not quite gonna cut it. And so we're working through that. This project could go out to bid as early as October and could potentially get constructed in the winter, but it's not the best time to construct it. Our partners would love for it to not be in construction during the heavy use season, but it's most likely gonna be done in the spring. Curtin Creek Community Park, another project that is in design. We just actually had a public open house last night for this project. And we're at about 30% design. We're working on the community development permit drawings, the site plan drawings for permit submittal. The estimated total construction of this project is $7.4 million. It has some walking trails and it has a rugby pitch, which was something that was brought to our attention during the master plan development process. And it also has a artificial turf field, some pickleball courts, a basketball court, playground, and a parking lot. This is actually sort of a joint effort between the fire department and the parks department. So the property was acquired to do both things. And so there's a fire station that was constructed out in front of the park. Future master planning efforts that need to take place, Pleasant Valley Community Park. There is a master plan for this park, master plan meaning just a site plan, and we'll probably revisit that master plan. The estimated total construction for this is almost $5 million. That includes obviously engineering and permitting, and then also property acquisition. So $3.9 million for development of this facility. It's a more of a passive park, pardon me. So it's play equipment, some expanded hearth surfacing, some park shelters,
restroom facilities, but no sport courts in this development. It's a community park. And then again, another site that will go through some master planning over the next couple of years, hopefully for construction in 2025 at Salmon Creek Community Club Neighborhood Park. We might want to rethink that name. It's anticipated to, you know, be about a $1.6 million project in total. And those are the projects that are in the, oh, forgot one more, Cougar Creek Community Park Development, another master plan that will need to be developed in the next 6-year cycle. And this park is doesn't really have a program use, and there are some habitat issues associated with sort of overlot development of this. And so I'm anticipating that this would be more of a passive park when we start the site plan development. And then just real quickly, capital facilities plan. I thought leaving this in for just a quick update. So we sort of $300,000 annually for preventative maintenance. Right now we're cutting down a lot of trees, as you can imagine. And then there are some major maintenance projects that are worth noting. Camp Hope water system improvements. There's a public access improvements at Camp Curry that would go along with the lease negotiation with the camp operator, and then replacing the downed fine line Pondview shelter, which we're working on getting shoreline exemption permit on that and replacing that shelter hopefully this fall. And that is pretty much it on capital.
David, real quick question. You had a meeting on Curtin Creek last night?
Yes.
I hadn't heard of it. Sorry about that.
Oh, I apologize. One of the things that we probably ought to do is when we send out our notifications is include all of you. We've relied on the website to sort of drive those notifications out, and then the list of people who have previously commented on the master plan would get those notifications, but we can include you in that notification circle.
Thank you.
Great suggestion.
Okay, thanks, David. So next on our list is we are looking forward to council consideration of the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan, and included with that, the Natural Areas Acquisition Plan and the Parks 6-year Capital Plan. It's currently scheduled for April 19th, so next Tuesday. It will be a 6 p.m. hearing, so it's the normal Tuesday council hearing at 6 p.m. It is, it looks as though it's going to be in person with a virtual hybrid option. Council just recently announced or made the decision to move back to in-person meetings with allowing for that, the virtual sort of hybrid option. And it's my understanding that they're working towards that for this next Tuesday meeting on April 19th.
Jump in there if I may. I will do my best to attend that one in person. If okay. Anybody else is able to join me either there or online, it's definitely one where I'm sure staff would appreciate the support.
Yes, absolutely.
I will be in Hawaii. Sorry.
Okay. I'll give it a go too.
With Zoom.
Yes. And, you know, there's opportunities for public comment at these meetings. You can write your comments and submit them by email in advance. All that information can be found on the website. So the plans are there on the website as well, if you would like to look at them. And in terms of public meetings, we've also been given the green light to to do the same with advisory board meetings. So I know our staff are currently looking at how it might work to do that for the Noxious Weed Control Board and the Railroad Advisory Board meetings starting in May. At this point, we're just looking at our venues and can they support that hybrid option, and then how do we do that? So no decisions have been made yet on in terms of pulling the trigger and having those meetings in person yet. But I wanted to make sure that you were aware, since this came down while Rocky was gone, so you can have those conversations with Rocky in the near future. And then sort of related to the Natural Areas Acquisition Plan, wanted to give you an update on some of those projects. We did meet with the Columbia Land Trust today, and the Optimus project is nearing completion. The Land Trust has signed a purchase and sale agreement with the owner. Appraisal has been done. Survey's been done, and they're waiting for the review appraisal to come back, and then they can finalize the deal, hopefully closing by June. So that would be another one on the list that's done. And then we did receive back an appraisal on Cedars, and we were waiting for the review appraisal on Cedars Golf Course, and then we will start to talk about next steps there. So some of the projects are moving along, and then with the Natural Areas Acquisition Plan, if that's adopted by council, we'll have a little bit more freedom and flexibility to move on some of the rest of those projects. And now that Danielle's here, she can help. The last thing I had on the list was Rocky wanted to mention that starting to look at some updates to our park rule sign in terms of how we present that information. And so he calls it the icons model. I think it's kind of like what you might see in a state park. I could share my screen and show you. There, are you able to see that? Clackamas Lake map key. Zoom in a little bit. Oh, that's the wrong one. So these are the icons that is kind of the transition we're thinking about making in terms of how we present information on our parks rules sign. So that's something we're just starting to talk about and consider for updating our rules signs. I think that is the extent of the division update that Rocky asked me to pass along to all of you. Any questions?
I would love to hear immediate reactions on us going back in person, where this is an entirely new group. So what are your thoughts on that?
I'm okay with it.
Yeah. People like to actually see each other.
I'm all for it. This is Stacy.
I'm good.
Cool. So maybe Kevin, we used to meet at Luke Jensen upstairs. If that's an option still, or again, if you could pass that along to Rocky, maybe we can make that happen next month.
Yeah, I will pass that along to Rocky, and our staff will continue to look at the options for providing that hybrid, that virtual component. We're assuming it's going to be something similar in terms of having the meeting on Teams, and then it's just figuring out the audio and video component of it when we're all sitting in the same room together. So more to come on all of that.
Cool. Any other comments? Don't see anything. Dave, you put your hand up briefly while Kevin was speaking. Did you have something?
No, I did not.
Okay. All right. I think we are up to roundtable, wherein we usually just update each other if we're aware of something cool. Why don't we just, I'll go through the screen. Teresa, you're at the top of my screen.
I am. I have nothing.
All right, Jim.
No, I've got nothing.
Don.
had a question because you mentioned the Columbia Land Trust. Is maybe you have a contact over there, Kevin, and curious of when that Wild Boy Creek will be removed, the dam will be removed from Girl Scout Lake, and then Wild Boy Creek moved to its natural status so we can allow for salmon runs up there. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that area of the state. So what's the location? And then I can find somebody to talk to you.
It's on the boundary of Clark and Skamania County, and in,
okay.
It's an old Girl Scout camp. A lot of my visitors in the Yakult are looking for it. It seems to be a destination. And I know that Columbia Land Trust was really heavily involved in selling it or doing some type of cooperation with the tribes to remove the dam, get rid of the lake and remove the, remove all the old buildings and return the creek and the area to its natural habitat.
Okay.
Just kind of curious.
I'll put out some feelers and try to find someone for you to talk to.
Hey, that would be very kind of you. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah, was that one of PAC's projects? Do you remember? No? All right.
Not that I'm aware of.
Me now?
Yeah, go ahead,
Noah. Okay. You had mentioned, David, that there was a slide for that, all of that information you had, and I didn't ever see it come up on screen, so I was wondering if maybe Kevin or somebody could send it out so we could actually see the list of it. I can't remember all of them without actually looking at them. And I didn't hear you say anything about Raspberry Fields, and I'm hoping that's still kind of on the list for completion in the next year. We gave you guys a grant about 3 years ago for that, and I know Nutter gave some money too, and so I was just curious how that's coming along. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention is, of course, the annual luncheon for the fundraiser for the Parks Foundation is coming up on the 5th, and I'm hoping that a lot of you will come. I just wanted to tell you that we are about $6,500 away from being able to fully fund all of our grants this year. So if anybody wants to give me $6,000, I wouldn't turn that down. We are giving money. The sand volleyball court had moved to William Clark Park, and now it's moved back to the skate park in the city of Camas. So we're giving money to that. We're helping to fund the lower halfway play park structure. That's an old structure. It's about 20 years old. That's getting replaced, and we're giving money for that. We're helping to support the Ron Onslow Nature Play area in Abrams Park in Ridgefield. We have two summer playground programs that we're funding, both the Battleground and the City of Vancouver playground park programs. And then Camp Hope is, of course, the program that we support for foster kids and at-risk youth. And then Teen Late Night is also in our funding this year. So we have quite a few projects that we're going to be able to fund, and we're going to be presenting those grants at the annual luncheon, which is back in person, yay. And then Bob Salinger from the Audubon Society in Portland is coming to talk about bird watching and birds in the Clark County area. So that'll be an interesting program as well. So we have a pretty good presentation, and then the Wager Awards, of course, and those have been chosen at this point in time, and they'll be on our website here pretty soon. So, yeah. Been pretty cool. And Harper's Playground, that's the other one. Yes.
So how do you get tickets? How do you get to go to the luncheon? I mean, I don't know anything about the luncheon.
So if you go to parksforclark.org, you can buy a ticket. You'll just see that it's like the second screen in, and it'll click you to the screen that you need to purchase a ticket.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you.
So yeah, and it's a fundraiser. So of course we're looking for donations to help fund grants the following year as well. So yeah, it's been a pretty busy year. So thank you for letting me say that. And I hope you all come.
I'll make sure that you get a copy of those slides that I shared. Those are just in the council presentation for next week that I sort of stole them. So I could more easily provide you with the capital update. So.
Cool. Stacy.
I have nothing cool.
Nothing cool. Nothing but cool. You are cool, so we got that much.
Oh, thanks. I think you're cool too.
For my part, I'll mention you may have seen a pretty good article on Steigerwald is reopening here May 1st, and we've got a ribbon cutting, I believe, May 7th. Yeah, May 7th at 10 a.m. In the new Steigerwald parking lot. That if you haven't made it out there, it's one of the more amazing projects in quite a while. It's well worth seeing. And then it's not directly applicable, but I still think it's really, really cool from a, we'll call it water park or waterway park, is we just landed the Sternwheeler out at the Port of Kamiswashugal and new ways to access the river. So very, very cool. I'm just thrilled by that one. That is all I have, unless anything else is out there for good of the order. We can go about finding dinner.
Thank you.
All right, we're adjourned. Thanks all.
Cheers.
Thank you. Great. Have a great evening.
Take care.